welcome to another episode of the Record of Lodoss War OVA Rewatch Podcast. My name is Alan.
And my name is Kate. We run ReverseThieves.com. That's where you can find all of our other podcasts as well as blog posts every week.
And if you have any comments about the podcast or your memories of Lodoss War, you can contact us on Twitter. My name is HisuiRT.
I'm NarutakiRT, and we also have Reverse Thieves on Twitter.
And if you just want to send us an email or maybe an audio file that we can play, you can send it to ReverseThieves@gmail.com. Welcome to Lodoss Island. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss the plot of the episode.
This is episode 8, Requiem for Warriors.
And we begin in a slightly unexpected place as the rest of the party is trying to catch up with Gim and Slain now that the war is over. But they are ambushed by two mercenaries thinking that they are Marmo forces about to raid a village they were protecting.
Yes, so Shiris and Orson attack the party. They get separated, so the party's split in sort of to two, and they're each fighting one of them. And once Orson sees the Shiris is in trouble, he goes berserk, because he is a berserker, and things start like escalating and getting worse and worse. And at the same time, Shiris realizes that they're not Marmo and that the situation is just a big misunderstanding. So they have to talk him down and, you know, prevent basically just a bloodbath. We switch back to Gim and Slain, who approach Carla's mysterious castle.
And Gim is not taking any more excuses. He basically says to Slain, if you try to stop me again, you're going to get an axe. So Slain realizes, all right, he's for serious. And Gim tries to confront Carla and like, Lelia, hear me, break free of Carla's spell. But soon he realizes that Carla's magic is way too powerful, and he then tries, well, take my body instead. She's like, no. I thought you were going to bring the whole party here and we could have a conversation, but if it's just you, it's time to end this thing.
Eventually, the rest of the party does show up and save Gim in the moment, and they start attacking Carla, but they just cannot do anything to her. It's just not even phasing her at all.
And, you know, after a few feeble attempts, she tries to, like, convince them, or at least most importantly, Parn, to work for her and be her agents in her quest for balance in Lodoss. And she shows Party, and especially Parn, a bit of her backstory and why she is the way that she is. But Parn rejects it and she's like, all right, you all can die then.
And just as the battle really heats up and everybody kind of comes after her, they realize they have to get rid of the circlet on Lelia's forehead. And Gim, through one final push, uses sort of the rest of his life force in order to really try to bring out Lelia's memories. And in his final act, throws his axe and it knocks the circlet from Carla's head.
Lelia's no longer possessed. The party is half elated that they've defeated Carla and saved Lelia, but they've lost Gim in the process, and they've lost one of their party member, because Woodchuck, being on the periphery of the battle, is possessed by the circlet, who sees both his weakness and his kind of being separated from everybody. And so while they have a bit of a pyrrhic victory and they, you know, mourn Gim's death, but we cut to the desert where Carla lives once again through Woodchuck.
Leveling up. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss player and character growth.
Parn still only has one move. He only has one way to fight, but I did feel that he did a lot of, he was emotionally better in this episode than he has been previously. I thought he was very good in resisting Carla when she says, come and we will guide Lodoss together. She's very convincing, but Parn realizes his inner goodness and that someone who is really protecting Lodos wouldn't use people's lives as pawns in their sort of scheme.
So he really plays this alignment.
Yes! Right? That's a really good way of putting it. I thought, oh, okay, you know. I mean, he was emotional, obviously. He just attacks. That's his thing.
Look, Kate.
He doesn't have a lot of strategy.
Look, Kate, when you invest that many points in charge feats and charge skills, and all your armor gives you bonuses to charge, you're going to use it all the time, even if it maybe is not the best strategy.
And I feel like we saw that also in the battle with the mercenaries, where it was like, he was somewhat physically capable, but also it was more important that he actually discuss things. And he also didn't attack them first, which is like a difference.
Although he would not drop that sword, no matter how many people advise him. Just drop the fucking sword.
I kind of was understanding that, though, because if someone is coming at you who is really scary with a sword and your only defense is the sword that you have, I'm going to kind of understand that you might not want to drop it when a random person tells you that that would be the best thing to do.
It just seems that in Parn's stubborn nature not to drop the sword no matter what.
Okay, fair.
And we do get a big character death, which is, you know, a significant change of character. You get the feeling that, like, Gim was going to do this mission no matter what. There are always those players who are like, nah, man, I don't care if my character dies. My character is going to do this thing no matter what. And I feel like that's how, like, Gim's player was. Either that or he was just tired of playing a character and wanted to play somebody else. But, I'm going to give the player the benefit of the doubt and say he was playing towards his character's goal and not, I'm tired of this character. I attempt to finish him off in this quest.
I do feel impressed that they get to the end of a story that he accomplishes his mission. Whereas I just feel as though from playing myself, it's like, it seems like a million years. Like, there's just so many twists and turns. But I was like, oh, look, he did it. And so I could kind of understand, no, we're almost there. Like, I'm doggedly going to finish this thing. So I got that. I also feel like we learn, a little bit more about Carla. A little bit of her history. And I don't think it really changes what we know about her. But it gives a slight bit of context to why she's so into the balance of Lodos. And that we also, I don't feel as though it's really explicit or obvious from what she's saying, but there is sort of the information that there was a magical kingdom, but now that kingdom was destroyed. So, you know, how that sort of plays into the history of Lodos.
Sword World Supplements. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss fantasy and RPG tropes and elements.
So, if you've ever played in a game, you know, sometimes players drop out and sometimes people want to play different characters. So, sometimes you'll have to introduce new party members as the established party is moving along and somebody new wants to join or I want to retire this character or have them go off over here. So can I play this new character? And I feel that's what Orson and Shiras are. I feel they come in a little early. We'll get, they're here to replace characters who haven't fully left the party yet, but they're introduced here. So when those characters leave the party, either because they die, get taken over by wizards, or retire from being active members of the party, we have two people to replace them pretty quickly. Gim dies. Eto, I think, leaves the party pretty much. I don't think he, like, doesn't he, like, take a priest? Like,
no, don't look at me. I don't remember.
I swear he doesn't stick around with the party. Like, he goes off somewhere and Woodchuck is possessed. So if nothing else, even if Eto stays with them, we need replacement characters for Woodchuck and for Gim.
Or does somebody get to play the super cool part of now being evil?
Well, there you go. Maybe Eto and Gim's character need replacement. And Woodchuck's character's like, you know what? I'm kind of tired of playing the bad boy. I'm going to go pure evil. I'm going to take that circlet and run with this man. Time to join Party Evil. So we were having a little discussion about this. The dwarves are somewhat magic resistant. They have like bonuses against certain enchantments and poison. And in some versions, maybe they have a higher resistance roll or like some magical defense. But given this episode is tanking high level spells like he's a Fates Day Night servant.
Look, maybe he learned some stuff from the Marfa priestesses, okay? And plus, he had plot on his side. I mean, do you think that, well, since this doesn't, I feel like that probably didn't happen in the gameplay, but would you have allowed it as a GM? Would you have been like, made that decision that somehow through your feelings and your connection?
Like, I definitely give people bonuses for like mind control, or like if Carla was like giving a spell that would like have everybody kill themselves. But he was tanking like high level fire. Like, once again, Slain said, if you step into the stream of death, any of you will die. And Gim was obviously taking damage, but he was tanking it like it was.
I mean, he does die.
But Slain made it seem like instant vaporization. And he was taking it like it was like a fire hose. You know, definitely not in the position you want to be in. And, you know, you're suffering injuries, but not like it was liquid death. That is definitely some GM play into the moment.
I really have to give props to Carla's super creepy castle in the middle of a lake and the misty forest around it. I mean, some superb classic looking imagery there, I thought, especially because at no other point is she in this castle, right? I mean, I don't remember that being a part of this ever. She's usually just around. I'm not even sure why she would have a castle.
So,
except that it really works.
So what happened is, I have a story. Gim found one of the Lodos Christmas cards that Carla had sent out, and he tracked her down from the return address, and he found out that's her permanent residence.
Like, why was she? I mean, if I think about it too much, it's just weird. Like, why was she even there? She had just myrtillated Beld with a giant spear and a lightning bolt. I mean, like, why was she chillaxing in this castle?
And yeah, and she technically murdered Fawn as well by setting that all up. So yeah. And then she's just like, all right, like,
She was tired.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to my castle, have some mimosas, catch up on all my stories that I'm behind on, because I was doing this whole War of the Heroes thing. And, I think she just planned to, like, binge watch some stuff now that she had some free time again.
She was Netflix and chilling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So what are... You know, we get introduced to a new class here. I guess, is mercenary a class?
It's usually a profession. Like,
okay, because I'm not sure what Shears' class is, because we know that Orson is a berserker.
If you want to go by general D&D rules, I would assume that Shears is a fighter with maybe some kind of specialization. Usually, like, if you're a mercenary, that's more how you pick your skills and your backgrounds and your connections and stuff like that. And, yeah, Orson is more barbarian, definitely with a berserker build in mind. Most D&D barbarians have some amount of berserker skills, but he seems to have, like, doubled down on all that. Like, everything towards that.
I really like that Diedlet said that he was possessed of the spirit of rage and madness. Just really colorful, I thought.
I found out recently that before Dionysus was more of a god of wine and debauchery, he was originally much more of a berserker underworld god. And then the Greeks kind of slowly shifted him, because he was actually a pre-Greek god. They kind of shifted him more toward wine and debauchery. Because of just dynastic cults. So he's very Dionysus, or old school Dionysus in that way. Once again, I feel like even more than the last thing, this felt like the boss battle of this first half of the battle, with like one of those at the first, say, stage of the battle, you can't really beat the boss and you're just doing like minuscule damage. And then you eventually either do something or last enough rounds that Slane goes, hey, we're actually supposed to be attacking the circlet.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, if you last enough rounds, they will then monologue about their past.
Well, yeah, they monologue about their past. Then Slane mentions the thing at the end of the monologue about where you have to hit the weak point, and now you can target the circlet. And then kind of the real battle begins.
I was also trying to remember if they had mentioned that previously at all. Because Woodchuck is like, the circlet! And everyone's like, huh?
No, because...
I don't think so.
We'll mention it in the differences, but is a major difference. Yeah, they did not mention that at all.
Because the only part... And, like, when Wart appears as a... However he appears to Parn in the previous episode, he's like, says a bunch of stuff about Carla, but he still didn't mention the circlet there. Parn, you're special, and you'll help.
Because we saw so little of that conversation, you didn't see the part where, like, everybody had left, and then Slane went back, and he's like, I'm sorry to intrude on you again, but I totally realized I had to go to the bathroom. Could I just sneak in? So Slane was the only one who went back to go to the bathroom. And as he was stepping out and going to say goodbye to Ward again, he's like, you know what I totally forgot? You know, if you ever do fight Carla, you should attack her circlet, because that's what she really is. And knocking that off will save anybody who's possessed by her. And he's like, man, you should share that with the rest of the party, like, immediately when you get back to them. And he's like, I will do that. Sure enough. And he just totally forgot about it by the time he caught up with them and just remembered then. So that's clearly what happened.
The Dungeon Master's Guide. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss comparisons between the book and the anime.
So, wow, this fight is very different in the book. As in, they actually have a plan in the book, as opposed to Gim just randomly rushing and hoping that his handmade hairpin will be enough to jog her memories.
Yeah, I feel like this fight in the book also shows a bit of growth on the characters' parts, whereas I don't really feel like we get that here, because in the book, there's a strategy. There is not just, I will now be Parn and do things. And so I feel like it kind of showed a little bit like more about how they sort of had worked together previously, and just, I don't know, it had a more cohesiveness with the rest of the story.
Yeah, because every time before this they confronted Carla, they just randomly tried random things and they all failed miserably. And the only reason they lived was because Carla just let them go, because she saw them as maybe possible useful pawns later on. Whereas, this time in the book, they strategize with Wart. Wart lays down all of her strengths and weaknesses. They come up with a plan with like, all right, so we need to use these anti-magic devices to drain all the mana from the area so she can't cast spells. We can't cast any spells either, but then we're on a little more of an even playing field.
Although that doesn't actually work.
But at least
they had things go wrong in the plan.
But at least they had, like, that seems on paper, hey, all right, this might not work 100%, but at least it's a decent strategy more than charge!
And Wart has given Slane a special staff for this particular fight. He's like, this will help you again. Although I do find it, I guess it's one of those things in the book that comes from the game where people just rolled bad or something, because the anti-magic devices don't work. Slane's like staff doesn't really work either. It went during this battle, so I'm like, whatever, I guess those things are in here. I guess good that things don't go as planned or whatever, but I thought it was also kind of amusing that they had all these objects and things and they don't really end up factoring in all that much.
Or at least they're definitely not the definitive game winners. Like, Carla was definitely not fighting at full strength because of the anti-mana things. And I don't remember too much of what the staff did. But I feel like when they were supposed to be trump cards, they were more like tools that weakened her. And also, they all go in a unified, like, let's do this. War has been decided. You know, nobody really won. But now that at least is no longer threatening to destroy all of Lodos, we can take on Carla. And they meet her as a unified front. There isn't the...
Well, Gim wasn't at the war, though. Gim right. had gone off on his own. But they do come together there. Before they enter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing that's interesting in the battle is that sort of the magic stuff isn't working, and then Deedlit and Parn kind of use themselves as sort of a distraction to Carla, and then Woodchuck uses his thief skills to pull the circlet off her, which I thought was actually so good. That I loved that in the book. I thought that was a great solution. It made use of characters who we weren't seeing, like, use their skills, and I thought that was just like a very clever thing to have happen. And it also makes more sense than why he gets possessed mm-hmm. by the circlet, because he physically touched it. So
it's just like he gets more like the circlet did a successful sneak attack on Woodchop.
Yeah, and I don't really know what the function of changing that was. I don't feel like I just don't see why they changed it in the anime. I don't think they made it better or like more exciting. I feel like they could have had everything else that was happening and still have Woodchuck steal the, like, I don't know if it was because they wanted Gim to have like the final moment because that would be more dramatic for his story. But I feel like even if that's what they wanted, they could have had, because in the book, Gim does pull out, like, he's like the hairpin does work. And like Lelia is like kind of warring within Carla a little bit. She's like remembering. And that's when she kind of gets caught off guard. And so I feel like that could have been it.
And he tanks several shots that would have killed the other characters. So that at least he's the only one who dies saving Layla. So, I mean, he does get, like, some big dramatic moments. It's just, the anime is very obsessed with focusing in on individual characters. Once again, we have that whole sequence that's basically Carla trying to seduce Parn. And I guess if you other fuckers want to come along too, you can work for me. But she is just laser focused on Parn, where she makes that whole, the general offer to the whole party in the book. And it's, once again, it's so much everybody playing their role in a way where the best D&D fight scenes or missions go, where everybody gets to do a little bit and feels like they're contributing. It really feels like every section, I mean, it's not like Deedlit and, you know, Woodchuck does save Parn that one time when he's falling, and Deedlit's spells definitely help out and save some people sometimes, but overall they seem very like minor support. And I think the anime is just obsessed with big moments for individuals, whereas the book is much more about seeing this party come together.
And I feel the most part, I don't know, for some reason, this one bothered me a lot for the change, whereas for the most part, I can sort of see, oh, I kind of get, like, why they've changed things, you know, they need more action, da-da-da-da. But for some reason, this one, like, bothers me. Maybe because I just thought, like, it seemed just, it was more thoughtful
mm-hmm.
in the book, so I guess that's why it bothers me. The other thing, which is not in the book, because I think, you know, they do show up later, or in later books, our two mercenaries, our new characters. I thought it was smart, this change, to put them in earlier, to sort of meet them and then have them come back. I like that a lot, as opposed to, I mean, I even in a lot of things, like, I feel as though you meet the new character immediately and then they join the party. So I kind of like that they were at least thoughtful enough to sort of, you know, show them kind of in the greater world context and then they'll come back again. So I did like that change.
Yeah, I assume that once again, what happened in the actual gameplay session is those are replacement characters for characters who either left the party or died in this battle. So that's just kind of more the novel sticking to the original replays. But yeah, no, there is some definite value in having these characters be existent before they joined.
And that brings us to the...
One other thing that I think may come later on, but I think it also shows the greater Parn emphasis and a little less of the Slain influence emphasis in the books. Not that Slain is the total emphasis of the books, but the fact that Slain gets moments to be kind of a main character on the par with Parn is that whole, like, the first book basically ends with, like, Slain having this, like, revelation about, you know, his feelings for Layla and how beautiful she is and all that. And, like, she will be my star and all that. And I feel like, I think they explain that a little later on, but I feel like they just totally do not even touch on that idea in the end of the anime. Or the end of this episode.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that's maybe at the beginning of the next episode. Because I do at least remember them having a connection in the anime at some point.
I could be wrong, but I think it's just more like, oh, bye. Hey, by the way, we hooked up.
I also feel like I'll mention it here. I don't remember if we mentioned it way back at the near the beginning. But the stuff with Carla talking about sort of the... getting a little bit of that history of magic reminds me that, you know, when you were saying that Slain is more of a main character in the book, or at least like a focus character more frequently, is that whole story with his school having been destroyed, like this whole like community of magicians and wizards, like he goes back to the school and it's all destroyed and it has to do with like Wagnard and sort of like it ties in to the greater story of magic and Lodos, which I don't think, well, that's definitely not been mentioned thus far. And I don't think that comes up at all. Like,
no.
Sort of that portion of Lane's story. So,
and that seems to tie into a whole bunch of stuff about magic schools and all that stuff. But yes, it's Lane is so de-emphasized that it just basically truncated or threw out any of his like major storylines. I mean, even Dietlitz's story about the decline of the elves and her going out to like try to reinvigorate the not dark elven people and, you know, bring in other cultures and reawaken the flame of that race has been kind of chucked out. As far as you can tell, she's just Dietlitz who is here. Oh, one other thing that you're talking about magic. Carla's whole backstory was explained a lot more in more detail when they had that long discussion with Wart and Carla in the castle. Because, you know, as much as I joked about it in the last section, that's where it's like really short in the anime, whereas it's a lot more conversation and we learn a lot more about Carla, her basically the fallen magic kingdom she came from. And just the general state of magic in Lodos and, you know, how it was once super high and now it's very much fallen since the decline of that kingdom.
So that brings us to the end of the book. So from here on, this section will not be here. There's no more book for us to discuss as the series goes forward.
Or at least there's no more book in English.
Yeah, I mean, there's no more book that we can read in order to compare and contrast. And a summary doesn't really help us because I feel like I would need more experience with it to really make a comparison. So yeah, we'll just have a little bit shorter episodes from now on.
Revelations from Cardis. In this chapter of the replay, we discuss our favorite parts and final thoughts.
I want to give them a big hand for good animation in this episode. Some nice work, especially in there's a, you know, the long sequence of the party meeting the mercenaries and that fight. I feel like they did a lot there. Even when they did use some, you know, shortcuts, it felt like they did them with style to make them feel integrated. You know, it didn't jump out at you when they were trying to save money. And there were definitely parts where they had some really nicely done animation. And I felt like it was all like on model and a lot of detail in the characters throughout those scenes.
Yeah, because I was a little worried, especially when we've seen in the last few episodes, when they start with Gim is remembering Layla while talking to Slain, and they use still shots up the wazoo. Obviously, they were like, all right, we're going to spend so much time and budget on, and just effort in general on these fight scenes. Everything else we're going to skimp on and like be as economical as possible when they put in the effort they really did.
Yeah, and even the scenes with Carla, while they weren't like super high budget, they look good at least. So it seemed as though maybe they were saving their money in previous episodes to make this climactic encounter look really nice. I appreciate that. I do think we probably should have had some more money put into the actual war, but whatever, you know, I forgive them. The other thing I wanted to mention about this episode that I really liked from a storytelling point of view is that we begin the story with a funeral and we end the story with a funeral. So, and it's, the episode is called Requiem for Warriors, so I thought that was a nice, like, poignant thing to have happen.
And I feel like this is a very solid end to the first half. There's clearly still problems. Beld is dead, but it's not like his army is in any way. They're just going, well, our boss is dead, I guess.
I mean, Ashram in the last episode vowed revenge. So I think we're solid on having a new antagonist.
Yeah. So, but I feel like they all set out to find out who was stirring up shit between Marmo and the rest of Lodos, and they found that out. They set out to rescue Layla, and they did. And so I feel that in general, at least the initial reasons they set out have all been accomplished. They've picked up some new important quests along the way, and as we mentioned in the last episode, there are a whole bunch of bad dragons that woke up that are going to cause some problems. The party's work is never done, but it feels like a good place to be, like, end with one. In the next episode, we will get into new material, some of which I assume is anime original material. Look forward to it.